There are no guarantees against unethical research. That's according to experts who spoke before the Presidential Commission for the Study of Bioethical Issues in March 2011. Hi, welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the Center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. Practicalbioethics.org. Summer McGee joins us to talk about concerns with the ethics of research. She is the executive editor of the American Journal of Bioethics and has written a yet-to-be-published book about presidential bioethics commissions, tentatively entitled Commissioning Bioethics. Summer, discussion before the president's bioethics commission noted that we already have more than 1,000 rules and regulations to prevent unethical research, but that it still happens. What's your view?
I think that what the commission is trying to figure out in this case is how can we, in light of the fact that we've just learned that there were in the 1940s and 50s and 60s many types of research being done that we would now consider unethical, how can we be sure that in this present day, when we think we have a very robust system for protecting research subjects, that we are in fact are going to be assured that we're not conducting unethical research, in particular in the international context. And I think that the commission is looking over this research with a very careful eye to see, are we in compliance with all of the regulations that are in place, and perhaps do we need to make some modifications at this time?
And some of the things they're looking at is that oversight is inconsistent, and then even if there's federal funding or a review is not involved, there may be some unethical research that we simply will never find out about.
Well, and that's absolutely right. I think that one of the big challenges, as we know, is that there is research that is done in the United States that is done with federal funding, and that requires compliance with certain types of federal regulations. On the other hand, a huge amount of research done is funded by venture capital and private industry, and so those kinds of studies aren't governed by the same rules. And so the concern is at two levels. I think it's the concern that even though we have research regulations in place, we can't be assured that they're always being followed unless someone speaks out or unless an institution voluntarily says we believe we have not been in compliance with something, or if in fact the federal government comes in and says we've not been in compliance with these regulations and stops clinical trials. And that's happened at numerous institutions throughout the last decade. On the other hand, we have to be concerned with the huge amount of research that's done in the private sector and knowing that the same regulations don't always apply unless the federal government chooses to say that any kind of research conducted in the United States is going to be governed by this rule. For example, the prohibition against human cloning. Unless we do have regulations in place like that, really the private sector is free to do whatever it wants.
The history here isn't all that good. The Associated Press published a review reflecting decades of abuse, and then we have the famous or infamous Tuskegee syphilis study as well. What do these situations tend to have in common?
I think what they have in common is the acknowledgement that there was a significant public health or medical problem for which we needed to have a solution. I think if you go back over the history of these research studies, the researchers, when they were designing and conducting the research at the time, believed that the research that they were doing was justified and that the only way that they could get the information that they were seeking was to go into particular populations who, in most cases, were vulnerable. They were prison inmates. They were children and adults in mental institutions. They were a variety of people whom we now have regulations in place to protect if someone wants to do research in those settings. But at the time, back then, I think that there was a sense that the overarching public good and that the knowledge that could be gained from doing this research justified the infection of people who were otherwise healthy, justified going into settings that otherwise might have been seen unacceptable in the general population, but in those institutionalized populations were allowed to be used, and some people say exploited, for the purposes of gathering scientific knowledge. And so those, I think, are really the commonalities we see in the studies that were done in the past. What also is common amongst all these studies is that it wasn't until a member of the media or some historical researcher went and looked to see what kind of research has been done that it was brought to light. This was true of the Tuskegee study, which had been going on since the 30s, wasn't brought to public scrutiny until the 1970s. So many of these other studies were published in the medical literature. People in the scientific community knew that these studies were being done, but it wasn't until someone made that cry out in the night to say, is this really okay to do? How can you justify research in these populations that someone has taken a step back and said, well, maybe the knowledge we gain doesn't justify how we use those people in that research?
Not trying necessarily to cut anybody any slack here, but are we doing kind of an apples and oranges thing because the attitudes were so different 30 and 40 years ago?
I don't think we're doing apples and oranges. I think that if you look back at the standards for the conduct of medical research, even in the 1930s and 40s, there was a clear awareness that we needed to get informed consent from patients or their proxies to be involved in research. There were clear guidelines for what we could and couldn't do in terms of how research was conducted across the board. I think, again, there was this rationalization on the part of the scientific community. A lot of the research that was done in wartime, for example, the Walter Reed yellow fever experiments, they were justified in the name of we're at war. We need to know how to protect our soldiers against contracting infectious diseases. These are huge public health problems. You see, this research was done on syphilis and gonorrhea and polio. These were huge problems that we as a society were struggling with. And so I think what happened was not so much that there was ignorance on the part of physicians or medical researchers that about what was ethical. It was that there actually was a risk benefit calculation done, and the decision was that what the knowledge we would gain would benefit so many more people that we could find expendable a small number in a captive population so that we could learn enough to be able to move forward scientifically.
A common theme in these discussions that you and I have had and other guests of the Bioethics Channel is how we achieve some balance in these things. There are a lot of regulations, but we need ethical research, but we don't need to slow down necessarily, or hopefully, the search for cures. Where do we draw that bright line, if it's even possible to draw that line?
I think it's very difficult to draw that bright line when you're in the midst of pursuing an answer for a very prominent, very prevalent disease. And we see this now even today. And I think one of the things that this commission will grapple with is now that they are looking at contemporaneous research done in international settings, that we will see, I think, that some of those bright lines that are so easy for us to draw when we're looking at research conducted 40, 50, and 60 years ago is not so easy to draw when we're looking at research today. And I think that what the challenge will be when we're looking at international research conducted in places like India and sub-Saharan Africa and South America is to not turn a blind eye to the idea that we may be doing things that are 100% in compliance with the federal regulations we have in place for international research, but that in the view of those people, those populations, or even perhaps when we look back 30 or 40 years from now, we will think, my God, why were we allowing people to do massive clinical trials on poor people in India? Or why were we allowing differential kinds of treatment or substandard care be provided in sub-Saharan Africa when we were testing the HIV vaccine or other interventions to prevent the spread of HIV? I think sometimes hindsight is the only tool that we have, and we use the best standards for conducting research and the most current knowledge we have. However, I don't want to cut anyone too much slack, because I think that we can, even as we're conducting research at this very moment, perhaps be more mindful of the fact that standards differ around the world about what is acceptable research, and that even with our own within our own country, that we ought not be too quick to justify on the basis of the scale or magnitude of any kind of health problem, that we can cut corners or utilize populations who are vulnerable without really thinking through how we want to conduct ethical research in our society writ large.
President Obama has given his Bioethics Commission two things to do. And one of those, as you mentioned, is taking a look at federally funded international studies. And the other thing is to take a look at that Guatemala situation that garnered some headlines several weeks ago and have a report to him by September of 2011. Is that an ambitious agenda?
It's an ambitious agenda, and the commission has a very tough job ahead of it. If just one of these topics were on their plate, it would be a huge job. And I think as the AP story and others reporters are beginning to uncover, just in the few weeks that have passed since the commission started on this work, they have been uncovering more and more research from the past that is now deemed, in our eyes, to be unethical. And I think that just that historical work alone will be a huge task for this commission. To also have assembled this 14-member international panel that is now going to be looking at how research is conducted around the world and to come to some both empirical conclusions about how research is being done as well as some moral conclusions about whether this research is being done ethically and how it might be improved is a huge job for any group to engage in, let alone that this commission is going to be contemporaneously dealing with both of these questions at the same time. I hope that they will feed on each other and that what we'll see is that the lessons we've learned from the past and how we judge research studies from 40, 50, 60 years ago will help us illuminate how we're thinking about research done in other populations now. And I hope that one of the things that that they would learn is that just because we're doing something now and we have good reason for it, so did the researchers back in the 1950s and 40s. And so I think that we have to be seriously scrutinizing our current research practices, federally funded and not, that are being conducted in the developing countries around the world, and be much more scrutinizing of whether or not this is the kind of research enterprise we want to be engaged in, because I am very confident that there is exploitation going on in international research around the world, and some of it is just turned a blind eye to. Some of it is consistent with federal regulations, and yet there are loopholes that people can get around. And I hope that this commission's work will expose what somebody testifying before the commission this week said is a very leaky system, and that we can plug those holes, and that we will be able to be much more proud and much more justified in the research and enterprise that we are engaged in around the world.
Summer McGee is the executive editor of the American Journal of Bioethics and has written a yet-to-be-published book about the Presidential Bioethics Commission. Summer, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
My name is Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.